speak to this friendly audience. I'd like to tell the Senator that we've had a full day, and it's been a very, very good day. We've had many speakers, among them Governor Mattis of Utah and the Vice President of the United States. Our concern, of course, is in federalism. And I want to introduce to you a person that I know as a friend, not just as a now U.S. Senator or a person in public life. One of the things that represents us, both within our state and within the nation, are those who are elected to office. It's always nice to have someone to which you can point with pride and say, yeah, he's from Oregon. I'll tell you, there's no time in which, or nowhere, no place in which we cannot say, Mark Hatfield is from Oregon, and say with a considerable amount of pride. Mark has made a contribution to our state for most of his life, through the Oregon legislature, to Secretary of State, to Governor, to U.S. Senator, and now as a senior senator from Oregon and chairman of Appropriations Committee in the United States Senate. I'm proud to tell anyone who would listen that we have Mark Hatfield as our U.S. Senator. He identifies with Oregon very well, and it's with real pride, and I must say, a great deal of pleasure to introduce to you Mark Hatfield, U.S. Senator from Oregon.
Changes. I know of no time in my memory when the federal government and its relationship to the people, and to the state governments and the local governments, cries out more with purpose and meaning for major structural change than today. And I'm mindful of the fact that Thomas Jefferson once observed that perhaps the Constitution might need rewritten every generation. I'm sure that Thomas Jefferson would not, over the 200 years of our history, probably subscribe to that frequency of rewriting the Constitution today, but that nevertheless still remains a very important item for us to consider as far as looking at the structural change requirement. Very few people in our political system today are thinking of the fundamentals or where we are going, much less where we ought to be going. Our government system has taken on the ethical value of our time, of instant gratification at the expense of tomorrow. The me first philosophy, who cares nothing about others, even if they are our own children and grandchildren. Part of the function of this conference and the new federalism Governor T has called must be to challenge this misshapen value. During the last half century, or perhaps even a little longer, more of our political history, our system of government has undergone significant changes than any other period in our history. But these changes have not been generally planned out or thought out. And so today we have a system that is out of balance, off track, run amok. Our government has withstood incredible pressures of economic tensions and foreign challenges to our national security and significant social movements. In the efforts to respond to these problems, legislators, governors, mayors, congressmen, senators, presidents have often patched together a jerry-built Rube Goldberg of government programs, grants, regulations, bureaucracies, budgets, appropriations, and taxes, the magnitude of which has only recently become understood by the American people, and they're not happy about it. There are hundreds of programs pumping billions of your tax dollars through leaky pipelines to the people of our country. In fact, more than half of the people of our country today are receiving some form of direct federal aid. The federal government has become a vast money exchange redistribution warehouse. New federalism and private sector initiatives are simply efforts to raise before the public the fundamental systematic question, isn't there a better way? In our urgency and eagerness to solve everybody's problem by government fiat, we have become too hasty. We have become careless with something very fundamental to our way of life. We have, in effect, made people more dependent on government instead of one another. We did violence to the system of checks and balances. What power belongs to government and what should be kept by the people and by the states and local governments. And my friends, let me say to you very honestly and forthrightly, we have run out of operating resources and revenues for both domestic and foreign adventures. So we have borrowed and mortgaged the future. We have mortgaged our grandchildren's political and economic freedom. Our nation has been on a political merry-go-round, and too few people have been calling for it to stop so we could get off. We need to start fixing the engines that have given us such a good ride for two centuries. The issues of new federalism, as I see it, that I want to bring to your attention, are not the questions of how we can get a quick fix, a tranquilizer to get us through this dark night until we can get back on the merry-go-round. Questions we must face are hard ones. How do we solve people's problems without bankrupting the public treasury? What new and different ways should our government work in order to operate in an orderly manner and with less of the people's money? How can we reorder our priorities to use more of our wealth for life-affirming rather than life-destroying programs? First, we need to recapture some of the partnerships. Our country was settled by people who built a covenant relationship with one another for the common good. They agreed together in a compact, a mutual compact, that they would each assume certain personal responsibilities to serve the whole community. Even had a personal obligation, each person, and everyone benefited. I think most of us have observed the march of history and realize that more civilizations have fallen from within because of decay and disillusionment than from the forces without. And we, unlike any other nation or civilization, have stuck together as a people unlike all in the history of humankind. Granted, we have had our riots, our social and racial tensions, and our civil rights and assassinations. But uniquely as a people, we have survived where other nations with much more social homogeneity have fallen apart. But the glue of the society today is under stress. And as is usually the case, the pressures are from within. Let me suggest that I think we can come apart. I think the conditions are such that it could happen when we stop caring for one another. when we abandon our covenant with one another. Secondly, we need to rebuild the partnership between neighbors. We need to understand where our neighbors are hurting and do something about it, not by referring them to some distant government agency, but by reaching out from our own hearts and giving them a hand. The President's Task Force on Private Sector Initiatives has been discovering how well Americans do this already. 800,000 nonprofit organizations, 84 million Americans volunteered in 1980, $48 billion in contributions. The covenant is working, needs to work better. Social contract needs updating. And thirdly, we need to restructure the partnerships between government, officials, politicians, and the private citizens, businessmen and women, working men and women, homemakers, students, all parts of our population. Government has grown too distant from the people it is supposed to serve. There's a chasm between the people with political power and the people who pay the taxes. Citizens must be led into the government to share decision-making. And part of the new federalism that President Reagan has advanced challenges us to ask the hard questions, just what it is we believe government ought to do, and then leave the rest to the people. That is the principle of the 10th Amendment to the Constitution. And so as I see the challenge here for us in this conference, with you specifically in the private business sector, in the private sector, it is a task to go beyond just voting and lobbying as a means of exercising your citizenship. The challenge is to get involved in making decisions about what the government ought to be doing, the structural changes of government, thinking creatively about what you could do instead of the government doing it to serve the community. The new federalism is a call to the private sector to do some border crossing and get in touch with the people who run the governments that affect your lives. Turning over traditional government functions to private enterprise, both profit and nonprofit, is a concept that deserves our collective careful attention and action. Let me give you some examples of what's happening as an example only to stimulate, to be more creative. In some parts of our country, fire departments are run by private companies for a profit. Scottsdale, Arizona. Airports are managed by private companies. Monroe County, New York. There are private security companies springing up to supplement the public police forces. Fort Lauderdale, Florida, Scottsdale, Arizona, Del Mar, California. And some states are even experimenting with private enterprise running their prisons at less cost and more effectively than the traditional way. Refuse collectors and environmental protection services are provided by private companies. In Fairfax County, Virginia, private refuse collectors provide twice the service at half the cost of the county's solid waste division. In 1978, the weather observation services at National Airport in Washington, D.C. were provided by the National Weather Service at an annual cost of $237,000. In July of 1979, the operation was contracted out to a private firm that underbid 27 other firms at a low bid of $67,000. These are but examples. The federal government is not only the nation's largest debtor, but it's also the largest creditor. The General Accounting Office has reported that $118 billion was owed the federal government as of 1979. That is more than enough to balance our budget for FY83. Bad debts, money owed to the government, or loans guaranteed by the government, and defaulted, amounted to about $15 to $20 billion a year. As of 1978, the Social Security Administration had made excessive payments of $1.5 billion. The Treasury Department makes double payments of more than 100,000 government checks a year. That average overpayment is $200. Most government agencies make inefficient attempts to recoup these overpayments and to collect these bad debts. The GAO, the Government Accounting Office, found that one large agency spent an average of $8.72 per debt to collect student loans. But the comparable cost for a commercial firm was less than $350 per day for the same operation. The point is, why turn over to private debt collection agencies the job of recouping the public's money? Because it's sound economics. No public or government function should be protected from the scrutiny of the people who want to ask if the private sector could do a better job. The Florida legislature has a part of its annual appropriations process, a review of every program to see if it could be better performed at less cost by the private sector. President Reagan is carrying out the vision which his fellow governors articulated over the past 15 years. He is biting a mouthful of bullets. And my friends, it is my view that it is time that the rest of us in government and in the private sector started chewing on a couple of bullets ourselves. For the next few years are going to be hard ones for all of us concerned with the public business, whether we hold public office or as private citizens. There is no point in hoping that we can stonewall against the tides of new federalism, wishing it would go away in 1984. The people of this nation have spoken plainly in a number of different ways. They are fed up with the system, the merry-go-round as it is running now, and they want some major changes. Tax revolts are but one example. The nuclear freeze is another example. We must face the realities, the difficulty and the danger of major transition and structural changes, especially for the poor and those who have grown dependent upon the system. This current confluence of economic slump, fiscal upheaval in government, social unrest, international tensions, and shifts in government structure and balance of power is not new to our country. We have had the experience before. We have come through. As you know, the details of President Reagan's new federalism legislation will be presented to the Congress later this month. The debate will mainly focus over dollars shifted from one program to another, from the federal government to the states and localities. It will be a prolonged debate as public officials seek to hold themselves harmless and postpone the ultimate impact of these difficult decisions within the Congress. The challenge to you as citizens, the private sector across this entire country, is to enter the debate and to move it beyond questions of fiscal and budget liability. To ensure the proper roles of government is what we must be about. To an appropriate ordering of the balance of power. To the securing of the fullest freedom of individuals within the context of maximum order for the society. The challenge to us is to undertake the perfecting of our founders' dream 200 years ago. Not only in Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, but all those who came in thereafter. And let us not have inhibitions or encumbrances on our imagination. May I engage perhaps in what might be considered as fantasy today? Is it possible that the state of Oregon could do a better job of managing the federal public lands on a base of contract, then federal agencies with all the layers, the divisions from here to Washington? Let me assure you, in my view, a Governor Attia, his administration, I think could do not only an equal but perhaps a better job. And all I have to point to are the lands that are managed under the Elliott State Forest, as one example of outstanding forest management at the state level. Is it possible that we could expand all the federal services today in contract form with both the private sector and Governor Attia and the state of Oregon to perform a better job, more efficiently, more effectively, with more compassion? This is the type of thing that we have to let our minds soar and our visions be raised. New horizons. I know of nothing that President Reagan has proposed that gives me greater enthusiasm than to say he is the first president since the advent of the New Deal in 1932 who's had the ability and the vision to bring into being, with your help and others, a real major change in the direction of this country. May I close by saying, the problems we're wrestling with today did not happen overnight. They have been accumulating, accelerating for almost 50 years. And no panacea exists to correct them, short of a major directional and structural change. That is why I think we're living in a very exciting time. We're living in a challenging time, but an opportunity that's not been before us in my lifetime, and that is to be creative, innovative, because we have a president, we have a governor, along with many other governors, mayors, commissioners, who reflect the attitude of the people, that the people's voice demands change, more efficiency, more compassion. This today is the beginning of a new America. It can be. Will you help it make it so under the leadership of Governor Attia here in the state of Oregon?
I told you first thing this morning that this conference wasn't going to end with our adjournment, and that it would have a life beyond today, and that we intended to do something with the information we received and will receive. To put form to that, I want now to announce to you the creation of my Corporate Voluntarism Commission. And I would like to introduce those who will be on that commission. And I know most of them are here, and if they would please rise when I announce their name. And I will tell you the charge I've given them. And when they rise, they've accepted. So the charge I'm going to give later on won't seem so ominous. First, Jay Shearer, Vice President, General Manager, General Teleport of the Northwest, Beaverton, will be the Commission Chairman. Jay, right over here. Thank you. Commission members will include Earl Watland, President of Tektronics. Earl was here. Is he still? Jerry Thompson, my Executive Assistant. Corky Stewart, Manager, Pacific Northwest Community Relations, Portland, Corky was here. There she is, back there. Representative Nancy Rouse, you met earlier today, and I see Nancy right there at the door. Phyllis Proppy, Executive Director, Volunteer Bureau of Portland. Phyllis, where are you? There she is. You've seen her earlier today. Ned Look, Executive Director of the Oregon Community Foundation, Portland. Ned, heard him earlier. Bob Hall, Business Manager and Financial Secretary, International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 48. I don't think he's here. Said he couldn't make it. I announced him as a member. William E. Bud Davis, Chancellor, Oregon State System of Higher Education, Eugene. Bud, still with us. Thank you. Jerry Christine, in Grants Pass, General Representative, International Brotherhood of Painters and Allied Trades, AFL-CIO. There you are, Jerry. Thank you. And John Spencer, who is Chairman of Federal Regional Council from Seattle, hooking us up then with the federal government. And John, I guess, has left. Let me tell you, so that you feel satisfied in what this commission is going to continue the life of our efforts. I'm going to ask the commission to examine the specific impact of the president's forthcoming New Federalism Initiative on Oregon. Two, chart the services and responsibilities state and local government can be expected to undertake. In other words, provide us a roadmap. Three, using the direction we've received from our speakers and participants today, provide us a better definition of those services and those programs most appropriately delivered by government, by the nonprofit sector, and by the private volunteer sectors. Four, provide specific directions to businesses and corporations in Oregon as to the needs and responsibilities we face as new federalism unfolds, and recommend the proper coordinating mechanism to ensure that those needs and responsibilities are fulfilled. Five, survey businesses, corporations, short the entire private sector in Oregon, and determine what efforts are already underway, what projects are proceeding, and what mechanisms already exist. And of course, I encourage every business in this room and every business in Oregon to cooperate with the Commission in helping us assemble this information. Six, highlight and recommend ways to recognize and reward volunteers and private sector efforts on a coordinated basis throughout Oregon. By getting this information out, we can increase the profile of private efforts underway and alert citizens of Oregon to the importance of their responsibilities. Seven, to make specific recommendations on coordinating our programs in higher education with the needs of unemployed and our redoubled efforts for economic development. Eight, follow up on the information we've received today and coordinate with my task force report on volunteerism and finding. Nine, I want this commission to provide a platform for the people and organizations who participate in this conference with us today. That is, not only business, but the whole spectrum of Oregonians who are represented in this room and will join us in this effort. We have your names. We have it on the computer. We would like to have you get in touch with the commission, but certainly, we would like the commission to get in touch with you. And we're going to ask them to deliver that kind of information to us in 60 days. It's a big task. We've called them all. They've all accepted. But I think it's important that we be ahead of the game. And now let me make some concluding statements before we leave. Senator Hatfield made it very clear. The form of the shadow of federalism is emerging. It is becoming clear. But it will happen. There is no question about it. It is important what the President has done. We would not have gathered here today if the President had not announced what he calls new federalism. But it is something that should have happened in any event. Because he began that debate, we carry it on. That Oregon is the first of those states in the nation to do what we're doing today. I want to make it clear because there's been some concern and a little bit of rumbling. Business did provide the means whereby we can put this together. But I want to make sure that no one presumes that businesses have done nothing over the years. And I mean small and large. I come from a small business. I know what our company has done. I know what our employees and my brothers have done over the years. And so a lot has happened. But what we're talking about is a new expanded road. One should not presume that those who labor for those companies and the unions organized have done nothing. Because it's very clear that we turn to them as we do business and solicit funds from them as we do business. And they've become a very important part of our whole life. And we should add a dimension to all of this. We're not talking about just contributions from unions or business. We are speaking as well of the volunteers within the companies who are encouraged to go out and work to help, to be a part of their community. Those have been ongoing. But if I want to say anything to you, I want to make sure something is extremely clear. It comes down to not the amorphous or ambiguous corporation, unions, churches, whatever.
Three, two, one. The farmers and ranchers of Malheur County are among the top agriculture producers in the state of Oregon. Recent figures show more than $14 million worth of potatoes were dug on Malheur County farms. Wheat production was worth more than $12 million. Malheur County livestock sold for more than $50 million, more than any other Oregon county. This month, I invite you all to join with me and KSRV Radio in this much-deserved salute to the farmers and ranchers of Malheur County. They're doing a great job.